more about their Westlake office, where they have complete design, production, and installation capabilities, check out SpeedProClevelandWest.com.
We've all seen the tragedies associated with drug activity and impaired driving. This is Lieutenant Craig Savettin of the Ohio State Highway Patrol. We need everyone's help to keep drugs out of our communities, keep impaired drivers off our roads, and get people to make good decisions when driving. Traffic and community safety is the responsibility of everyone. You can do your part by calling #677 to report illegal activity and impaired or reckless drivers to law enforcement. Together, we can make Ohio a safer place to live and travel.
This is ESPN 850 WKNR Cleveland, streaming live at ESPNCleveland.com and on the ESPN Radio mobile app.
Open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. 'Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there.
Hello there! That was Meatball kicking us off today. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs. The man, the myth, the legend, Meatball, with you here today on CBD. As Gibbs would like to say, loaded show, Gibbs. We've got Sir Andrew Gribble, who's decided that he thinks Tuesdays is not enough time. So he wants to take over every day that starts with a T.
It's good.
So he wants Tuesdays and Thursdays with Gribbs.
Well, his fingers don't ever stop, so I figured we can give him a little bit of a break, walk over here, let talk him, a little shop.
Let him orate.
Yes.
Dictate, as opposed to always typing. At 2 o'clock, we'll have Matt Williamson, the host of the Dynasty Blueprint on Blog Talk Radio, former ESPN NFL analyst and former scout of the Cleveland Browns as well, is going to call in to break down the Browns' 2016 draft class. We'll also do the position preview at wide receiver later in the second hour, and that's going to be obviously a hotly contested position. A lot of competition in that room for Al Saunders, and as he gets the four rookies. And the rookies have reported today, Matt Wilhelm, they are here in Berea. They have been filtering in all day long as they get ready to start their rookie mini camp tomorrow. And I just want your take on for these rookies when they walk in here. The last time that you walked into a football facility at college, you were most likely the BMOC.
Sure.
At Ohio State, for example, you were coming off a national championship. You were the man. And then you walk in.
Were?
What?
Were? I was the man. Always the man.
You're still the man. But at that point.
Yes.
In your life, you were the man at that time and place at Ohio State. And then you walk in. Are you kind of unsure? Are you supremely confident? What kind of goes through your head when you walk in for the first time and all of a sudden you realize, not only do I have to come in here and meet new people, but I've got to go out there and at some point earn the respect of people that I've been watching play professional football for years.
Yeah, it's a strange dynamic, simply because, and I've been a part of, you know, multiple draft class where we've taken one or two first round guys, which is kind of what's going to feel like Corey Coleman, Emmanuel Ogbah really are. Knowing this roster, the guys that make it up currently know the impact that both of these guys could have on this football team. And in some cases, if you're not the odd man looking out at the position group that they drafted these guys, you know, whether it be an outside linebacker or wide receiver, you're in favor of these guys because they're going to help you, you know, level this thing off and get some wins on the football field. So I think for the guys that came here to, you know, the first, second, third round picks, what, Cody Kessler and above, I guess you could say, are all familiar with the building. So the layout, you know, what everything, having gotten a tour and getting the VIP treatment by being, you know, first and second day guys, everyone else never having been to this building before is first and foremost is where do I have to be? When do I have to be there? Because the one thing you don't want to do as a rookie is be late. Yep. Secondly, what do I have to be wearing? Because I know every place, some people allow you to wear street clothes in meetings. Here, I know, and I think it's changed with Hugh Jackson, it is issue only, which means if it hasn't been issued by Brad Mellon and his staff,
You're
not wearing it in a meeting. That's shoes, socks, shorts, underwear, T-shirt, hat, okay? So that's that. Then you get into the dynamic of meeting individuals, and I think some of these guys are going to have their head held high and their chest out because of what they accomplished in college and have a little bit of swagger and confidence about them meeting some of their teammates for the first time. But it really is follow the leader. Now that these rookies are here, and that's this rookie minicamp is gonna be a great icebreaker for these guys to get one-on-one with these coaches well beyond just a meeting prior to the draft, to just dig into this playbook, ask the stupid questions. This is your chance to ask the stupid questions, because when the vets come to the room, you know, that you do like that half hand raise. When you don't understand, a rookie would rather go out on the field and screw it up and get coached on the field than ask a stupid question in the meeting room, so that every veteran kind of turns around and looks at it, at who asked that stupid question and why they asked that stupid question. So there's a lot of different dynamics, but I think embracing it, and if you're going to make a mistake, make it at 100 miles an hour. That's the one thing that I would say to these rookies. And in the minicamp, there's going to be mistakes.
And that's
fine. To the naked eye, to the fans, to the thousands of fans that hopefully come to FanFest or are coming to FanFest, they won't realize it unless it's a drop, you know, or overthrow by a quarterback or something of that sort. But they won't notice the little nuances. And hopefully, out of this rookie minicamp, these guys are going to get coached intensively going into OTAs with a grasp on what they're going to try to accomplish.
How important is it to have this time? You talked about the one-on-one time with the coaches, but to have this time where everybody's in the same boat, because for the veterans, I would imagine we're going to preview the wide receiver room and all the changes that have happened there. You know, they realize when the Browns go out and draft four guys, they're drafting these guys to take our jobs.
Yes.
So how important is it to have that time with the coaches to get acclimated and develop that relationship before you're dealing with, you know, being around these veterans who I'm sure are leery of the fact that you're there to take their job?
This is where the coaching experience that makes up this coaching staff really comes into play, because they've had draft class after draft class. And I'm not trying to knock, but you got to look at, you know, Mike Pettine and the staff that he put together. Many of those guys, not having been in the NFL, might have had recruiting classes, but not draft classes of guys to really dive in and answer these questions, because this is your one opportunity to really go slow. And that's when we had Hugh Jackson the one night, I think either after the draft, I asked the question, you know, what's your timetable of what you want to accomplish? Because I know Hugh Jackson wants to say, I'm this way in to what I want to get accomplished by this date. You know, the middle OTA, by the end of OTAs. I would think Hugh Jackson wants to be pretty close to, you know, to having everything he wants in by that vet minicamp. Meaning they're going to expound on what they do, but he wants, you know, flawless, seamless practices, executing
sure.
exactly what they accomplish over the next 10 OTAs and this rookie minicamp in. So that's the checklist that I think the communication that I always talk about between player and coach that needs to happen. That was good enough. That wasn't. And when you go watch that film as a team, you can understand his expectation of what is good enough. From drill to drill, in the drill, the competitive nature, the physicality, the execution, the technique, or lack of technique, lack of execution, lackadaisical, all those things. Because Hugh Jackson, in his mind, wants to go step, 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 step up that ladder.
Right.
And he doesn't want to stay on one rung too long.
It certainly does not. And this draft class is going to be a big part of setting that foundation, and it'll be key for them to assimilate quickly to what the Cleveland Browns are trying to do. From everybody we've talked to, and that's mostly on the defensive side of the ball, though, they feel that things are much simpler, easier to understand, and easier to pick up this year than they were last year. Gil Brandt put out a column today ranking the draft from 1 to 32 based on the players in his top 100 drafted by each team. Added those up, they got a score, and they ranked all 32 teams. At number 7 were the Cincinnati Bengals. Number 11 were the Baltimore Ravens. Number 13 in the top half of the National Football League were your Cleveland Browns. Say the Browns possessed a bounty of draft picks, 14 total, by the time the 2016 draft was all said and done. The Browns added more depth than top-shelf talent. If half of those 14 picks contribute in some way this fall, not to mention the addition of two future second-round picks and another first-rounder in 2017, the 2016 draft will have played a major role in the latest rebuild in Cleveland. The players drafted by the Browns in Gil Brandt's top 100 were Corey Coleman, wide receiver from Baylor, number 17 overall, Emmanuel Agba, defensive end, Oklahoma State, or outside linebacker here, number 36 overall, and number 78 overall, Sean Coleman, the tackle from Auburn.
Wow.
So three in the top 100 for the Browns. Those wondering where the Pittsburgh Steelers finished in this list, the Pittsburgh Steelers finished all the way down at number 31. So three
Steelers
teams,
didn't get a Buckeye this year, did they?
I don't believe they did.
I don't either.
Three teams from the AFC North in the top 13. Again, 7 for Cincy, 11 for the Ravens, and 13 for the Cleveland Browns. And if you could get, you know, when you have 14, even if you go and you add Jamar Taylor, 33% of those guys end up being significant contributors to your football organization. That's like almost going 100% on a draft for a normal team, five out of seven.
So that's 5%. We'll just, roughly we'll say five guys. Five guys become good, solid role players on this football team. You hope to do the same next year. Four of those coming in the first, 64 picks next year?
Yep.
So odds are that, say, you got two of them, a first and a second next year. Say a first and a second fizzle out. And then by 18, because you've accumulated, 10 good quality, building blocks, 2018 is the year that you go on your run.
Yeah.
And I mean, looking at our division, Flacco's coming off an injury. Can he bounce back and not get re-injured? I think the Ravens took a step back last year and did everything they can this offseason step back. Roethlisberger's not getting any younger.
No.
You look at the departure of Hugh Jackson and how demoralizing, free agency was to the Cincinnati Bengals. Are they going to be the same team? That I don't know. So this division is slowly shifting. And I think if you look at what the AFC South and the shift that they've had, and you look at the AFC West, my old division, and the shift that happened there.
Sure.
It was the Chargers and everyone else for a long time. Now it's the Broncos. They put together the right template. Now you have the Raiders getting building blocks, the right general manager, the right coach. You got, since Andy Reid took over with the Chiefs, went 3-13 to 13-3. And he sustained it, by the right culture, the right mindset, the right individuals, that selflessness that goes into being, successful. The more guys you get to buy in, the better. So it's possible. So, I mean, that is something that I see. The AFC North's been Ravens, Bengals, Steelers dominated for so long. When are they going to drop? It's bound and determined to drop. Because I think,
Flacco's contract is terrible, and the Ravens are definitely getting older.
That's what I mean. And, the injury bug's going to catch them, eventually, and there's going to be no value left in certain players if that injury bug does catch them. So because, the Bengals are predominantly frugal with the way they spend their money. The Steelers pay at certain positions, but not all the positions. So it's just the way they do business. It's bound and determined eventually to catch up with them. Father Time's going to catch up to them as well.
Well, it started to last year with the Ravens, and that's the team that everybody thinks it's an automatic bounce back for them, and I think that's what's going to be very interesting to see is if they do automatically just bounce back this year.
Yeah.
After a down year where they did have the injuries last year. Flacco was banged up. Matt Schaub made a start against the Browns. Suggs was hurt. Will they bounce back from that this year? We'll see. Steve Smith was hurt. We'll see.
Yeah.
But interesting, Gil Brandt, 13th for the Cleveland Browns. That's a positive score. Bill Barnwell also wrote an article giving grades to every team in the AFC North for their offseason. We'll talk about that when we come back. Meatball, what did you think of the Browns draft overall? If you were saying, where'd you rank them in the league? Would you say they're top half of the league? You're pleased with what you saw?
I was pretty pleased with what I saw. Just all the draft picks kind of add up as long as they pan out, Can't complain about it. So
yeah, a lot of talent coming in here for the Cleveland Browns. And again, it's good to see three of the top 100, which is a good number. I think the Browns would argue that Carl Nassib, in their mind, was the top 100 type of a guy. Obviously, yep. They were very high on him. And we'll see how he pans out, what kind of an immediate impact he can have. When we come back, we'll take a look at Bill Barnwell's offseason report card for the AFC North. We'll take your phone calls as well, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm, who is still the man, Gibbs, Meatball on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. It's not too late. Get your tickets now. Fan Fest this Saturday at First Energy Stadium from 11 to 5, a rookie mini camp practice. all kinds of stage programming. You're going to have a Hall of Fame roundtable with Joe D, Jim Brown, Paul Warfield. You'll also have a discussion of the 1986 AFC Central champions with Bob Golic, Canford Dixon, Kevin Mack, and more. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Over 20 players scheduled to appear for autographs, including RG3, Duke Johnson, Danny Shelton, The Crow, Joe Hayden.
Nate Orchard.
Travis Coons, Joel Batonio, Cam Irving. Lots of players there. You have an opportunity to participate as well in a very cool locker room sale where you can get stuff that you just wouldn't be able to get anywhere else from the Browns. So definitely get in there. Check that out. You can get your tickets now, clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. I'll also be hosting a 30-minute discussion with Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Sashi Brown, and Vice President of Player Personnel, Andrew Berry. Matt and I will be working alongside Ken Carman and Tony Lima. And there is a report, by the way, that Mo Pedman will make a special appearance.
Wow. Hopefully that Ken Carman and Mo Pedman are not on the same side of the stadium at the same time.
That might not, right.
Counterbalance, baby.
That's right.
Like an airplane.
Like a judge, yes. Like the scales of justice. All right, Bill Barnwell went through the AFC North, gave his off-season grades. Baltimore Ravens, I'll just give you the grades on the other teams if you want specifics, we can dive in that. Gave the Baltimore Ravens a C+. He gave the Cincinnati Bengals a B. He gave the Pittsburgh Steelers a B+. And then we get to the Cleveland Browns, and he goes through a lot of things. And we'll start with the Cleveland Browns. What went right? They traded down for massive amounts of draft capital, accumulating a lot of assets, and most importantly, 14 quality players and the three future picks we talk about, the one, the two twos as well. When you look at the Chase Stewart draft chart, the Browns added 32 points of assets to their coffers with their trades. To put that in context, the expected return from the number one overall pick in a draft is 34 points. Throw in the extra compensatories, they're up to 44 points of extra draft assets. That's as aggressive a game plan as any one organization has ever executed in a single offseason. So they did a good job there. They added 14 players, and they signed RG3 and Barnwell saying, Griffin, one of the few free agents the Browns did sign was Griffin. Added a quarterback. If he doesn't work out, doesn't cost them anything. If he does work out, they've suddenly acquired a franchise quarterback without impacting their comp picks as well. What went wrong? They let a lot of young talent go. We talked about that. You know, Travis Benjamin, Alex Mack, Mitchell Schwartz, Tashawn Gibson, as well as a couple others. They didn't trade Joe Thomas, he's saying, is something that went wrong. If you're going to rebuild, why not trade Thomas? But some people seem to think that they are going to get better value going forward. What's next? Signing players after May 12th, something that you and I talked about yesterday. The Browns still have plenty of holes on their roster, more than $30 million in cap space to work with. Once they can shop without incurring the risk of losing their compensatory picks, it would behoove the Browns to target some veterans with upside still left in the free agent market. There aren't a lot of players fitting that definition, but players such as Andrew Corliss or Tremaine McBride could be an upgrade in rotation roles given what's left on this Browns roster. Overall grade, A-, best in the AFC North.
That's good. And I mean, just at the tail end, now that it is in fact May 12th and we have the ability to take part in free agents without it affecting compensatory picks. He mentions Andrew Corliss. I played with Andrew Corliss in Green Bay. You have to understand, you know, his role. I thought he had flashes of becoming a franchise-like tight end, but then obviously he would flash back to reality and show, you know, with drops or injury, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers has found another target. He's a guy, you know, that do you add him at a vet minimum salary and bring him in to compete?
I don't know. That, to me, that of the places of need, that doesn't jump out to me as a huge one. Does it jump out to you as a big one?
It does. What happens if Gary Barnage gets hurt?
We bet.
How different would our offense look? How different would it feel? How would the productivity offensively have to be distributed when you take away what Gary Barnage did last year and what you hope he can do again?
I think
in the middle of your offense.
I think it depends on what you see from Telfer, Bibbs, and Devolve. It depends.
Point taken, Telfer, Bibbs, and who'd you say, Devolve?
Yeah.
Have combined to play in how many NFL football games?
Bibbs made a couple appearances.
Okay. Three.
A handful.
At most. So you're going Barnage, 8-year vet, finally came around, top 100 player in the NFL. You lose him, and you have three games played in by your three backups. You immediately, and my whole point is, you immediately interject someone who's probably 27 years old, okay, 28 years old, on a minimum deal, who wants an opportunity, who can level off the depth at a position.
So the question then becomes, is it worth it to bring in a guy like Andrew Corliss, right? Would you bring him in, and he's 28 years old, you bring him in, would you want to do that and then therefore have to cut one of the young players that you want on your team?
Well, first, for me personally, I don't think you don't care. It's DeVal or Bibbs.
Right.
It's one or the other. So one's getting cut. As much as you like DeVal, drafted where he was drafted, you got to fight to make a football team.
Sure.
Okay.
Or there'll be a practice squad.
Right, or a practice squad guy. So DeVal or Bibbs, if it is, in fact, DeVal, you can put him on, you know, your practice squad, and you have the opportunity to bump him up and bump him down as you so see it fit. And, you know, as we said, a Princeton tight end wasn't probably on many, many teams' radars, as Seth said himself. You know, he had some conversations here and there, but didn't know where he eventually was going to go. So I just think that there's drop-off at the tight end position, because what we know of Seth DeVal so far is he's more of a detached tight end than an attached tight end, as we know Gary Barnidge to play. Now, Randall Telfer, as you know, would probably be the opposite tight end of Gary Barnidge in 12 personnel, you know, the blocker of the two.
Yep.
So when something happens to Gary Barnidge, you immediately need to replace it with production. And my whole point of being is you may or may not get it from Randall Telfer because he's your blocker. He's a blocker for a reason.
Correct.
And then DeValve might not be able to play attached, so then he has to play detached, which changes Hugh Jackson's offense, changes the reads for RG3. It changes a lot. So my whole point is I do think it, you know, and I even think a running back will be added as well, even after the comments. I know I'm great with Crow and I'm great with Duke. Then what? You know, talk about the Glenn Winston carry. What happened? You know, it's not much production.
No, you got to see if they like Terrell Watson, who they brought in, or I think that's absolutely
right.
A place that you'd add a veteran.
Right,
a
but
to
I'm just saying, is to me, you know, Watson is Watson capable of executing the Isaiah Crowell role or the Duke role? To me, he's kind of
not.
He's not
definitely
either.
Crow. He's bigger.
Bigger. That's what I meant.
He's a big guy.
Right. But is he as explosive as Crow?
Probably not.
I'm just saying, you want to add players like the guys that you have in case, you know, from a depth standpoint, competition.
The question just becomes, from a philosophical standpoint, well, first of all, with Corliss, he had the gun incident. He's on ACL. He was towards MCL and was on injured reserve last year. So you wonder about his health. You wonder about if the off-field thing plays in with what they're doing.
Sure.
But let's forget that stuff. It's more,
and this is not
me,
so much about Andrew Corliss.
Right.
It's like that, just the depth.
Do you want, in those backup roles, 25-year-olds, 28-year-olds, 30-year-olds, what do they really want with given where they think the Browns are and where they're going?
Sure.
I think that'll be the question. You know, because right now, anybody that gets brought in, we are at 90. I confirmed it today. We're at 90. So anybody that's brought in or signed, somebody's going out the door.
The one, and I guess my only hesitation is, and it's just, you know, kind of being the pessimist, as we always are so optimistic about going young and following this template that Sashi Brown is creating here, is when something happens to, you know, your starters, are the rookies able to step in and produce? And it's been unproven. Justin Gilbert hasn't to the level that he should have. Johnny Manziel hasn't to the level that he should have. Cam Irving hasn't to the way that he should have. Okay, that's three of our last four first-round draft picks, and they didn't step into that starting role and succeed the way we thought them to do.
Correct.
Now, is a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh-round pick going to be able to do that as well? The odds are against them, is my point. So do you interject a vet at minimum salary, bring him to camp, roll him through OTAs, and essentially then you have to really be judicious on what you do with your practice squad and make it hard. I want it to be hard on Sashi Brown to put 53 guys in here. Hold true to the way in which you want to recreate the Cleveland Browns, but make it difficult to put the right 53 on this team and add those 10.
So the question becomes, if a guy, a veteran that's on the streets right now, how good was he?
Well, I was on the street twice.
At this point in the year?
At this point in the year, once.
Once.
Yes.
Okay. when you went where?
San Francisco.
To San Francisco.
Yep.
But you were injured.
Right.
Right.
So
it's just an interesting thing. You also were going to teams, though, that were looking at you, were teams that were attempting to be competitive.
Sure. And I just think that, you know, you discount.
Not that the Browns aren't.
You
that,
discount
that
the
that way,
you,
but.
I think you're discounting the experience of having played in the National Football League, regardless. At one point, if you've played 3, 4, 5 years, someone thought you were good enough.
For sure.
Four different times to keep you on a roster. You
for
know
sure.
what I mean? So you were good enough at one point. And I think when you draft a guy, we don't know if they're good enough yet.
No,
so I want another guy that's done it first, you know, as a safety net. Because I think I just don't want to be late into training camp and get hit with an injury bug and be scrambling to put 53, you know, out on the field without a bunch of rookies and, you know, truly take the bumps and bruises associated with the turnaround.
Yeah, I think it's important to see, you know, if you have a guy like that in here, you'll have an opportunity to understand at training camp what the drop-off would be between that veteran player and one of your rookies if you need them, and then you can make an educated decision. But I don't think it's a bad idea at all to put yourself in a position to make that kind of a decision.
And I really do think that halfway through OTAs, coaches will know who can cut it and who can't. Probably even prior to having the pads on. I know there's a physicality missing from OTAs,
sure.
But their ability to grasp, you know, the football game in the classroom and then transfer it into production on the practice field.
Sure.
And lastly is some of these guys aren't going to be getting a lot of reps. It's I got 4 reps, and I've heard the frustration, you know, in young players, in undrafted free agents go, man, I went through 3 hours of practice and I got 4 reps. I'm like, you better went 4 for 4. Or else
right,
pretty quickly you're going to be on your way out.
And that's the other thing too, right? When you do bring in a veteran, if you do, is that something that you do later because you're confident from what you've seen they can play in the NFL? So you'd rather get your young guys the reps now as opposed to giving them to a
sure.
veteran who may or may
yeah.
not be here.
And I think when you go after, it's guys familiar with, you know, a Hugh-like system.
Sure.
That, you know, learns a similar terminology. Are we number-based? Are we word-based? You know, someone who comes so that when they do come in, you bank on their experience having played in the NFL and their ability to grasp an offense very quick or defense very quickly.
I mean, I remember last year one of the guys that you brought in was Rob Housler. That didn't work out for you, and you ended up going younger guys. I also think that there's got to be a balance between two, because, you know, as Goobs Cleveland pointed out, that when you if you do bring in a veteran like that, and let's say a tight end, and let's say we really believe in DeValve, to expose him by cutting him.
You can't be scared to do that.
Is risky.
Can't be scared to do that.
What if you really like him?
You said you're gonna are you gonna sacrifice?
To me, I would sacrifice at that point a journeyman veteran for a guy that I think could be really good in 2 or 3 years when I think that we're going to be ready, like you said, in 2018.
Sure. I just think in closing.
Because can't you always sign, if you do have that Barnes injury, can't you change your course then and find somebody that's played in the National Football League if
yeah.
you really wanted to?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you want somebody in the system. You want someone thinking and living in the Hugh Jackson culture.
Right.
I'm just saying you can't be scared to lose young players. I can't put him on the practice squad because someone might pick him up. You can't live like that. You just got to do what you do, you know, and that's Andrew Berry's job, to have a funnel full of guys that if they take our guy off our practice squad because that was our choice, boom, I got somebody right in his place.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think when it's going to be an interesting balance to see how that plays out when you're looking at, you know, a multi-year rebuild versus, as you said, the desire to have somebody who can come in and play for you right now.
Sure, and I just think, you know, you hope 8 different Sundays that 70,000 people show up for the product that they put on the football field.
Yeah, but I don't think because it's a young product doesn't mean it can't be a good product. And I would say that people in Oakland and Jacksonville were very happy with their young teams, even though the year after they got their young players, they picked 3rd and 4th in the draft respectively. But I think people were still happy to go out there and see the product, even though it hadn't translated yet at that point to a lot of wins
yep.
for either of those teams. I mean, what, Jacksonville picked, what, 5th again this year? And everybody loves Jacksonville. Everybody loved Jacksonville, what they did last year, and they still picked 5th in the draft this year.
Yep.
So I think that it is a balance. No, I think, and that's going to be interesting because that's where the tough decisions are going to be made. And that's where, if there are, you know, the potential for friction between coaching and personnel, it's when the personnel says, listen, this is our plan. It's always been our plan. We're going to go with the youth over the experience here so that we can get these guys where everybody needs to be, you know, when 17 and 18. Whereas the coach would say, yeah, but I need some guy that can come in and play my offense today. or my defense today. And that will be truly interesting. Before we get to Sir Andrew Gribble for Thursday's Gribs, I know he's been waiting. Phil in Brecksville, welcome.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Phil?
You know, Nathan, Matt, I trust Gil Brandt, but to not put this draft up in the top three, you know, I think is not right. Look, what I was concerned about most was Hugh Jackson's draft. Did he have as much input as they said? And if analytics is all about speed kills, then I'm all in. You know, they know that they have to disrupt the passer, and they know they have to spread the defense. You know, and I'm all in with that. You know, with Cody Kessler, I'll go to Ron Jaworski, and I remember, you know, if you ask Jaws what's the single biggest attribute of a quarterback, what will he say?
Accuracy.
You know, and I'm all in with what they did. I watched Cody Kessler play. That man gets the ball off on time. He makes right decisions, and he's accurate. We've had so many quarterbacks that have not been. You know, Brady Quinn was not accurate. You know, a lot of them were not accurate. So, you know, for them to put this draft, I think it's sour grapes again. You know, for them not to put this whole draft in the right context and put us in the top three, I think it's more of the same of the media, the national media, you know, not giving these people the due that they deserve.
Well, this is, again, he put the draft in the top half of the league, and there are specific criteria here. This is actually not a Gil Brandt saying, this is what I thought. He ranked the top 100 players. He assigned point values to them from 100 for the first player taken, 99 for the second player taken, all the way down to 1 for the 100th player taken. The draft classes were ranked based on his power 100. So everybody you had who was taken in his top 100 had their score, right? It was basically 100 minus their number plus 1, right? So if you were the first pick, 100 minus 1 would be 99 plus 1, 100. So, and adding those numbers together, and then it just spit out a score, and that was how he ranked them. So it was actually, there's zero bias in this. You can disagree with his top 100 rankings, but there's no bias there. Overall, people are favorable. You saw Bill Barnwell said about the Browns offseason. But again, you can't say this is a top three class for a few years, number one. Number two, what you can say is the Browns executed on their plan of bringing in quality players of high character, guys who are explosive athletes, guys who score the football, get to the quarterback, and also picking up future assets for drafts with a first rounder in 2017, a second rounder in 2017, and a second rounder in 2018. That you can't dispute. How good the players that they drafted ultimately turn out to be, only time will tell with that. All right, Sir Andrew Gribble joining us in the Dog Bowl when we return right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Meatball, Jason Gibbs, joined now by Sir Andrew Gribble. Gribbs, what's up?
Hey,
I was leaving it on from
internally before that signal from Wilhelm. I was putting 10 to 1, all my money on the microphone not being on. So
that's why Vegas has good great teamwork. Casinos, Gribbs. That's you. Why they're able to build great casinos. Maybe get an NFL team soon as well with the Las Vegas Raiders would be something.
Jerry's on board now, so that means there's some real traction to it.
It's legit.
Yeah, Jerry Jones had a lot of influence with the Rams move to L.A., so it seems like they have a plan in place. Probably just going to have to convince a lot of people, though, that this is going to be okay. I think they're going to have to sell the non-gambling aspects of Las Vegas to win some people over who are conservative in that.
When's the NFL just going to embrace gambling and make the push to make gambling legal? Because if they were able to get a cut of that action, I feel like it's a no-brainer. NBA's exploring that right now.
I would think it's the behind-the-scenes stuff in Vegas with the gambling that they would not want any part of.
And to me, gambling, NFL, sports betting, that is not my first concern. My first concern, and I think Brandon Marshall spoke about this, you know, on some platform. Guys have trouble in Cleveland with the Barley House and West 6th, okay? We're talking about, like, Sin City, professional athletes with a lot of money. I mean, that's DUI, you know, domestics and, you know, gun stuff and gambling.
But is it that much different than
if you have that life
in Miami?
Yes.
Or you have that life
yes.
in Atlanta?
Yes.
I don't know about Atlanta.
It is.
It is.
I'm still, even though it's trending that way, I'm still going to be a surprise if this actually happens.
Me too.
I just think there's too many hurdles that they could find an easier solution. Unless the Raiders owner, I forget, it's Al, what's his son's name? It's like
Mark. Blank,
Mark Davis. Unless he really pushes
tremendous
this.
Tremendous hair.
But I think he's going to have some, he's going to have some other
tremendous
options,
bullet.
I would think, at some point.
I just think the Raiders are perfect team to be in Vegas. I mean, you couldn't have a better team to be.
I'd be interested to ask Jack Del Rio
if he would want it.
And Reggie McKenzie, with the progress that they've made at that franchise in the last 3 years, if they're going to uproot that and their success and drop that down in Las Vegas.
See, it could be my naivete, but from talking to some of the athletes that I have had the pleasure of working with before, Atlanta and Miami, to them, were better than Vegas, especially Atlanta.
No, but here's the thing. Why is Atlanta so great? Why do you talk about NBA players and the night?
The Vegas of the South.
Okay, but why?
Why?
You can't gamble there.
The demographics.
There, the demographics.
Sure.
And what is the highlight of a trip to Atlanta for a professional athlete?
Well, it used to be the Gold Club, but it's not there anymore.
Okay, strip clubs, right?
Yeah, but you can have, I mean, Tampa.
They're
everywhere.
There's hundreds of them. Hundreds of them in Las Vegas. And the opportunity with institution as well as gambling and so on and so forth, all at your fingertips every day. I'm bored. I'm going to go to the club. I'm going to go play some blackjack. I'm going to go play some Baccarat. Hey, practice is over, guys. Meet you at the Cosmo.
Yeah, but how's that different than somebody saying, like, meet me at the Fountain Blue?
Okay.
In Miami.
It's not.
Just that every day in Vegas
but I
is
guess,
like
well, if you understand,
7 days
I guess,
a week.
We have to take into account the logistics is the Miami Dolphins training facility is in Davie, Florida, which is actually 10 minutes from Fort Lauderdale, which is 35-40 minutes from South Beach, Miami. With traffic,
at least
it takes you about an hour minimum to get down to the beach, or actually down to Miami to get to Miami Beach, another 20 minutes. So it's an hour, 20 minutes for you to get where you want to go, parking, all that stuff, flashing $100 bills, whatever.
Sure.
In Las Vegas, you can get there in a matter of 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, you'll be
in if you live in Henderson, it's 15, 20 minutes, which is where everybody lives.
You have to be within a half hour of the strip. Yeah, there's 100%. No question.
Correct.
Right.
So
Atlanta, their facility is actually significantly out of Atlanta, but that's for training camp and stuff like that. Their actual everything's downtown for the Falcons in Atlanta. It is interesting. I mean, I think you'd have to be very careful about the kind of guys you bring. The other question becomes, does that become somewhat of a home field advantage for you? Because at some point, like, you are a grown-up and you are a professional. At some point, you're not going to do Vegas every night. I mean, let me ask you this. Could you have had more fun if you were in Vegas or when you were in San Diego? Would it have really been that different of a life for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I looked forward to Vegas to me was an $86 flight on Southwest away. And I was like a fat kid in a candy store.
You had fun in San Diego.
Of course.
I mean, you guys were getting
after
it.
But, I mean, every opportunity I had to go to Vegas, it was like crank it up a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Imagine living in that.
See, I wonder if you live there, if you don't crank it up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
at some
sure.
point, if it becomes like mundane.
You're just trying to rationalize that this is actually going to work. And Gribbs and I both sit on the side that says it's not.
It might become the best home field advantage.
That's what I was
going to
say. I think it might be a great home field advantage.
Sure.
Just like everyone jokes about Sunday games in L.A. for the road team. Those teams are always dragging on Sunday afternoon games.
I mean, Jalen Rose did his whole podcast on the toughest places to play in the NBA, and Atlanta was number one. He's like, he thought that was a 10-point home court advantage because guys would go out and they would never come back and get. By the way, Dr. Tracy Vegas wants everybody to know that he lived in Vegas 24 years, never had a DUI, a domestic, or any run-in with the law. It's actually a very normal place to live.
Sure. Did you make $250,000 a year or more?
That I don't know.
For five consecutive years?
A doctor. I don't know if it's like my friend Sonny the Doctor Wasco is actually a doctor
saying.
Of nothing. Just
I'm just saying.
The doctor. But.
Okay. And as an NFL, if I'm Roger Goodell and I'm trying to clean up player safety, off-the-field issues, you're interjecting 90 members of your team, the coaching staff, who don't want, you know, they're not walking the fine line either. There are a lot of them former players, guys who've been in other cities.
Look, we've had problems with every aspect here in Cleveland. Coaching staff last year, players.
Point taken. Right. It's happening in Cleveland. Throw us down in Vegas. See what happens.
I just think, first of all, I want there to be a team in Vegas. I am biased. I think any badness can happen anywhere. To your point, to flip it around the other way, we're in Cleveland. There should be no issues, right? If it's based on just the city itself, Vegas should be all issues. Cleveland should be no issues. And we have had plenty of issues. If you want to find trouble, trouble will find you. Is it easier to find in Vegas? Yeah. It's pretty easy to find in Miami if you want to find trouble in Miami. It's pretty easy to find in L.A. It's incredibly – in New York, they'll deliver trouble to you. You know, I think it's just a matter of the individual, but I can totally – it's called Sin City for a reason. It's an adult playground for a reason, but I think it would be a very interesting thing to see there. I don't know. I'd like it. I'd love – I'd be a fan of it, that's for sure, if it's not clear yet. All right, Gribbs, rookies reporting today. What are you looking for here with them getting in here? And we were talking about just the opportunity for these guys to really have the chance to be with the coaches before the veterans are around them.
Yeah, I mean, this is – it's going to be a daunting day for these guys no matter what, and it would have been a lot more daunting if you're walking in and seeing Joe Thomas, Paul Kruger, and those guys practicing alongside them. Now, obviously, those guys have been working out here, but this is their moment to kind of get acclimated to the – work-in-progress locker room that is going on downstairs. It won't be their official home, but just getting comfortable with the building, getting comfortable knowing where the coaches' offices are, knowing just how they'll be – just simple stuff, where they're going to park, where they're going to do all this stuff. Stuff
I just said.
Just to get,
yeah. What do
just
I need
to get
wear?
Comfortable. Yeah, just to get comfortable with what they're going to be coming to every day for 12 hours a day once the season gets rolling. And I think on the field, you just want to – I think there's probably going to be a lot of nervousness from these guys on the field. You want to prove that you're worth what this team has invested in you. And I think for a large contingent of what we're going to see at this rookie minicamp, undrafted free agents and these trial guys, I mean, they're fighting for their careers.
Yeah.
And I think even though this isn't technically real football, what they're doing, you're going to see guys maybe trying to the level where they're trying too hard and it ruins their potential chance. So it's a matter of these guys kind of balancing what they can show and how they can stand out without trying too hard and, you know, accidentally running into someone and hitting someone when they shouldn't and looking like an out of control player. So it'll be on the coaches and everyone to evaluate. And maybe when this weekend's over, you come out with a couple diamonds in the rough and you readjust the roster.
Yeah, the Browns would have to make some moves if they do want to sign anybody and get them in. That's something that we will have to keep an eye on as well. I really want this team in Vegas, I'm telling you. Now I'm really excited about it. Matt Wilhelm's poo-pooing it. I'm excited about it. I think Gribbs is excited, too.
I'm on the fence. I'm not the biggest Vegas guy.
You'd be
so
excited.
I don't know. Dangerous.
Dangerous?
Dangerous. Yeah.
There's no pro sports team there. They know, I mean, look, they know that they couldn't have the NBA there. The NBA, the All-Star game that was there, that was a debacle. The All-Star game in Atlanta was also a little bit of a debacle. But
you're just in love with Atlanta.
I went to school there.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Emory Eagle,
you're
man.
You're a little biased.
Still undefeated. Great city, Atlanta. But I'm saying it is. People get after it in Atlanta. The dirty South. It's a good place. All right. Rookies are coming in, Gribbs. And we've talked about that. What position group? We're talking about the receivers. Do you think there's a focus on any of this rookie group more than the receivers just from the sheer number of it with the four of them?
Well, I think at this rookie camp, looking at the undrafted free agents and some potential tryout guys, you're going to have all four of those drafted guys there. But I think that some areas that were addressed both heavily in undrafted free agents, I'm interested in what they're going to do with these defensive backs out there. I think that's when you add the number that they did four in undrafted free agents, that shows that even though it wasn't a position heavily addressed early in the draft, it's one that they're clearly trying to get better at. And I think that I'm interested just because there's not much internet footprint on Trey Caldwell, as we've done a lot of digging on that guy, the fifth round pick. So I'm interested to see what he looks like. Interested to talk to him tomorrow as well. And then just seeing if there is a DB or two that stands out and latches on with a roster spot. A guy that stands out potentially just because he was invited to the combine is AJ Stamps, the safety from Kentucky, a position of need for this team right now. And, you know, if you start impressing early, as we've seen with K'Wan Williams a couple years ago, I mean,
yep,
playing time is realistic for these guys, especially with the way the roster is set up right now.
And Gribbs, do you think that, you know, there's not a lot of physicality in these mini camps, but do you think there's for a fan who's coming on Saturday to FanFest, that to look at Emmanuel Ogbah or Sean Coleman and see the value that we see in them because of the positions of need that they will fit for the Cleveland Browns, but like a fluidity and a speed of them playing at another level that they can notice, you know, to the naked eye, that we should be able to point out?
Yeah, and I think that an example of this, even though he wasn't a big guy and at a big position, but you noticed last year at rookie minicamp that Duke Johnson just had another gear.
Yep.
And it really – it really stood out compared to a bunch of other tryout guys and undrafted free agents. It's going to stick out more in this kind of situation than it will when you're with the rest of the team, because your talent is, like a guy like Corey Coleman, you would expect his talent is going to really stand out in this group because he's surrounded by a lot of guys who went undrafted and some guys who had no shot at getting drafted.
Right.
So I think that's where it can stand out. I thought last year Danny Shelton kind of stood out just from the size and what you could see from him and his potential when he was surrounded by guys like that. So yeah, I'll be interested to see. I think a guy to watch as he progresses in his first few months in the NFL, I'll be watching Carl Nassib, just seeing how he's going to potentially add weight, grow into the position from what they're going to ask of him. But I think just seeing Nassib and Ogba at that introductory press conference, though, stood out to me. And I mean, those are big guys. And it's just seeing Ogba, it's crazy to realize that he ran a faster 40 than about 15 wide receivers at the combine. I mean, that's what really stood out about him, because he's a big guy.
We're going to maybe see him and Hollywood Higgins go one-on-one on the 40-yard dash time and see what happens there. And is it also amazing, the one guy that we don't talk about, Browns drafted four receivers. And I would say, like, in the order that they are being talked about, obviously Corey Coleman, then Hollywood, who was actually the last of the four, then Peyton, and Ricardo Lewis is kind of either the unknown or the forgotten man, yet he was the second receiver taken by the Browns. So I'm curious
arguably at the second most high-profile school of that group. It was just that Auburn wasn't very good, and I think that they just didn't have, and they were very not good at quarterback, and I think that really hurt what he was doing. But he had the draft in a couple years ago after that miracle catch that he made when Auburn was undefeated, or had a loss but went to the national championship. Then I think there might be more attention. But he could be someone, especially in this setting with his athleticism, no pads on, and that could be someone that stands out.
Yeah, I want him to stand out, that size and that speed. You're talking, Wilhelm, a lot about the logistics of guys coming in. Compared to what they would have had in college, what's this cafe going to be like for them? And how does it compare to other things that you've been with in the NFL?
Oh, it's the cafe here is probably up there with the best that I've seen.
Okay.
In the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles actually have an amazing cafe, and they actually have like fried food Fridays.
No surprise though, the person who made this cafe what it is now is Joe Banner.
Right.
Because I think
that's
what he had at Philadelphia.
But sure. I think that, you know, the food's going to be great. I think that even more so than just the food is the strength and training staff, and how some of these guys, you know, they were the man at their school. And, you know, obviously we're, you know, right under the wing of the strength and conditioning staff there. Don't be surprised if it's not the same thing, because they're now dividing and conquering by position group. You know, we heard, you know, Danny Shelton talk about Evan Marcus and his relationship and literally closely monitoring Danny's nutrition as well as him getting leaner by putting on more muscle. You know, so I think that these guys are going to love the attention to detail that Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson have put into them as the product on the football field.
And I would think the transition, you might be able to speak on this more, but the transition for these guys from the college meal program to the NFL is much less than it used to be, because now it's part of the college football arms race, especially with the class that this team has. Most of these guys are big school guys.
Yep.
Like when a couple years ago when I was down in Alabama, I mean, they put that, they have nutritionists, they really up the game. And once Alabama did it, then people are starting to fall in line.
Sure.
But maybe a guy like a Trey Caldwell coming from Louisiana Monroe to this, that is going to be a big transition for him.
I just had the only one I essentially ate at Ohio State was dinner, like post-practice meal. They'd fill our Buck ID cards, you know, with X amount of credits, and you were on your own, whether you wanted to eat breakfast or not, you know, because you're a student at that point. At 2:30? Whenever that kind of horn sounds and meetings start is when you're theirs and you're technically under their umbrella.
And then it's go time.
Yes.
Then it's go time. What was it like at Bama?
They're intense.
Their facilities?
They built this brand new facility that was a $10 million type deal with it. It went viral because they had a waterfall in multiple places in the weight room. And the big thing was you walked in, they just had like rows of like Cliff bars and bananas for guys to grab at all times a day. But it's not like that everywhere else, but it's starting to trend in that direction. I imagine Baylor's done a tremendous job in upgrading their facilities over the last few years. Didn't used to be that way. They used to have one of the worst stadiums. Now they have one of the best. So
and
I imagine it's trickled down. down. I mean, Oklahoma State's got some nice facilities.
See Boone Pickens. Yeah.
So, I mean, these, especially with this class, a lot of big schools right now. But like I said, a Trey Caldwell from Louisiana Monroe, they might be better off than they were 15 years ago, but it's still not on those other levels because they don't make the kind of money that the Alabamas, the Oklahoma States, the Penn States that they make. So I would say, but still coming here and in this cafe, I just think it's the amount of time these guys spend in this building means they're going to be exposed more to these kind of meals where NCAA has restrictions
sure.
on how long you're allowed to be in there. It was just a big deal that they're allowed to now pay for snacks that this college, I mean, that was just passed a couple of years ago. But like Matt said, I mean, there's time where these guys are in their dorms. They're surrounded by kids who I know when I was in college, it was probably the four least healthy eating years of my life. So they're surrounded by guys like that, and they're going to fall off and not eat that stuff every meal of every day.
Certainly. All right, Gribbs, are you going to be a fan fest for people to come? I've gotten some tweets about it. They want to know if they can come hang out and talk with Gribbs.
Yeah, you know, with the way the schedule's been rearranged, I will be there and kind of just wandering around for the first couple hours. I'll just be checking it out like everyone else, and then I'll be locked in on the practice field once practice begins around 2:30 or so.
All right, so come out. You can see him. Obviously, he has you covered at all times. Prolific in his production, along with Patrick Max, ClevelandBrowns.com, and the Browns mobile app. Follow him on Twitter, @Andrew_Gribble. All right, when we come back, we'll have Matt Williamson, former NFL scout, will be with us. Talk about this Browns rookie class and what we can expect to see when they hit the field for minicamp coming up next.